Chapter 8. Henry shook his head in disbelief. I think everyone has lost their minds. He turned and found Granny Relda crying into her hands and shaking uncontrollably. Sabrina and Daphne raced to her side and hugged her tightly.
Those poor people, she said. I can't give them any hope. Billy won't change his mind, and he shouldn't. We all have to fight, tooth and nail, or we are all doomed.
It's gonna be okay, Mom, Henry said, resting his hand on her shoulder.
No, it's not, she cried angrily. Look about you. Of all the craziness this town has been through, have you ever seen Fairyport Landing like this? It has never been this bad. But you want to run off, back to your New York City. You would leave if you could. Just then they need us the most.
Henry said nothing. He looked around at his family and walked away by himself.
Veronica, I'm sorry, the old woman said. I'm very tired.
He'll be okay, Veronica said. Sabrina wasn't so sure. When he didn't come back for an hour, she went looking for him. She searched through the Hall of Wonders and didn't find him anywhere. He wasn't at the camp or the hotel either. Sabrina suspected he might have gone back to Granny's house for a little privacy. There was no way she could walk all the way back to the house's portal, so she looked for Mirror, who could take her in the trolley. She found him inside the Room of Reflections, pulling a shard of a mirror from one that was shattered. When he saw Sabrina, he slipped it into his pocket and snatched a broom.
Good, I could use a hand, he said, as he pointed to a mop and a bucket on the far side of the room.
The bucket was filled with steaming, soapy water. Sabrina took the mop and ran it over the floor that Mirror had swept.
People have been tracking mud and leaves in here all day. You'd think some of them grew up in a barn.
I think some of them did, Sabrina said, recalling the talking goat who had nearly killed her while steering the flying carpet earlier.
Mirror chuckled. Don't miss that spot over there, he said. I like to keep this place sparkling. One of these days, Architectural Digest is going to want to take pictures. I plan on being ready.
I guess you're not used to so many people in here, Sabrina said.
Mirror shook his head.
Not that I mind visitors. The hall can actually get quite lonesome at times. But this has been unprecedented. All these wannabe soldiers running around leaving their filthy fingerprints on everything. And I thought Puck was a mess.
So you just clean when we aren't around? Sabrina asked. She had never once wondered about her friend's personal life.
Oh, no, I keep myself busy with my little projects, he said. So, why aren't you with your family?
I'm looking for my dad, Sabrina said. He's pretty upset.
I took him back to the house. Give me a second and I'll take you.
They swept and mopped until the room was sparkling, then stepped into the hall and boarded the trolley. Mirror took the driver's seat while Sabrina stood nearby, holding a strap hanging from the roof. In no time, they were zipping down the hall.
In all the fuss, I haven't had a chance to say how sorry I am about Briar. I know she was important to you and your family. It was a terrible tragedy, Mirror said.
Sabrina nodded and tried not to cry.
Not to mention the return of your parents. It must be particularly hard on you to hear them bickering.
You're reading my mind, Sabrina said.
If I said your sister's attitude was bothering you, too, would I qualify as a full-fledged psychic?
Sabrina smiled.
You've been paying attention.
I see everything that goes on around here, Mirror said.
I'm sorry that Uncle Jake snapped at you, she said.
He's upset, Sabrina, and he has a right to be, just like you do.
And then it dawned on Sabrina. She was angry. It wasn't fair to have suffered for so long, only to have her parents wake up to chaos. She had done what she was supposed to do. She grew up, took the responsibility of looking after her sister, even learned to appreciate her family's legacy and responsibility. She had done all this in the hope that there would be something at the end that made all her struggling worth it. But that's not what happened. She felt cheated.
Starfish, do you believe in happy endings? Mirror asked.
You mean like in fairy tales?
Mira nodded. Quite a number of them have happy endings. Even the story they wrote about me is a happy ending for Snow and the Prince. Do you believe in them?
In real life?
Snow and William might argue their story is real life. What I'm asking you is, do you believe one might happen to you?
I used to, Sabrina said. I thought when my parents woke up, we'd all move back to the city. Granny and Uncle Jake would come for visits. Things would go back to normal. That's my happy ending.
And you've given up on it? Mirror asked. Sabrina shrugged. Mirror sighed. I believe everyone deserves a happily ever after. But I think that happy endings don't just happen by accident. You can't wait for one. You have to make them happen.
I'm not sure what you mean, she said.
I'm saying you are responsible for your own happiness, Mirror said as he brought the trolley to a stop at the end of the hall. If you want to be happy, you have to work to make it happen. You can't just wish for it, and you can't put it in the hands of other people. I know you thought when Henry and Veronica woke up they'd give it to you, but that's not how it works, Starfish.
So, what should I do?
Mirror shrugged. I can't possibly know, Sabrina. Only you know how to end your story. It took me a long time to realize it myself. I'd hate to see you grow bitter waiting. If you want a happy ending, you have to go out and take it. Sabrina nodded. Mirror always made her feel better. She felt like she could tell him anything and he'd understand. In many ways, he was her best friend. So I suppose you'd like me to wait while you talk to your dad? Mirror asked. Sabrina smiled.
You're the best.
She hugged the little man and climbed down from the trolley. Hurry up, the meter is running, he said. Then he took the shard of mirror from his pocket and used it to check his thinning hair. A moment later, she was standing in the spare bedroom of Granny Relda's house. The power was still out, so the house was dark. The windows had been shut tight for several days, and the air was stuffy. From the shouting and explosions outside, it was clear that the Scarlet Hand was still surrounding the house and doing its best to find a way inside. But the protective spells were still working. Sabrina called out for her father and heard him reply. She followed his voice to her bedroom, rather, his bedroom. He was lying on the bed, staring up at the model airplanes he had constructed when he was Sabrina's age. A photo album rested on his chest. He turned his head when she entered and smiled.
Need a friend? Sabrina asked.
I didn't think I had any friends left.
I know that feeling, Sabrina said.
She noticed the collection of marionettes Pinocchio had made of her family resting on the nightstand. I didn't want anything to happen to them, her father said. He worked so hard. Sabrina sat on the bed next to her father. He turned to her. I don't want you or your sister to train the soldiers anymore, he said. No wands, rugs, rings, or unicorns. I don't want to see you helping anyone. I don't want you running off to fight. I don't want you to get more involved in this than you already are, understand?
Yes.
Good.
But, Dad, it's a lousy idea, Sabrina added.
Henry looked shocked. Sabrina realized that waking up to see that his daughters were older must have been troubling. But dealing with their independent personalities also couldn't be easy. He rubbed his face in his hands, something he did when he was trying to wrap his head around a problem. Instead of answering Sabrina, he sat up and flipped through the photo album. Inside were yellowing photographs of the Grimm family from long before Sabrina was born. Her father stopped at a picture of himself and Jacob, dressed in long wizard robes and pointy hats decorated with tinfoil stars and moons. Each boy had a magic wand in his hand and was pointing it playfully at the camera. They couldn't have been more than 7 and 9. I was around Daphne's age when my father opened the Hall of Wonders and its contents to your uncle and me. Back then, there weren't any locks on the doors except for the ones with very dangerous weapons or creatures. Jake and I ran wild in there. It was like a giant playground, and we didn't have to share the slide with other kids. I was learning to conjure fireballs and handling dragon eggs before I hit the third grade. Dad thought it was good for us to know how to use magic. There was a picture of the two boys sitting atop a griffin. Despite its dangerous claws and vicious beak, Jake and Henry looked like they were riding a pony on a carousel. Their father, Basil, stood by proudly. Henry continued, "We didn't take magic seriously. Jake and I saw it as a little game. There didn't seem to be any consequences." "Well, there are consequences, Sabrina, and they can be deadly." Sabrina knew the story of Basil Grimm's death well. When her father and uncle had almost been men, Uncle Jake had found a way to temporarily shut off the magical barrier that surrounded the town. Once it was down, Henry's girlfriend, Goldilocks, would be free. Unfortunately, the spell also shut down a special prison intended for several very dangerous ever-afters, including Red Riding Hood and a creature known as the Jabberwocky. The monster was a hulking, lizard-like creature with hundreds of teeth. Once it was free, it killed her grandfather and changed his sons forever. Both boys left town and went their separate ways. The tragedy also ended her father's relationship with Goldilocks.
"Dad, that was an accident," Sabrina said.
"We're supposed to learn from accidents, Sabrina. We're not supposed to go around repeating them over and over again. That's why I don't want you and your sister fooling around with that stuff. That's why I need to get us out of this town as fast as I can."
"So what you want us to learn from your mistakes is to avoid trouble? Even if you can help, you should run the other way?"
"Yes," he said, then paused. "No, I don't know. I'm confused. You know, someone doesn't come and give you all the answers the day you have a kid."
"Would Grandpa Basil run?"
Henry was quiet. He flipped through the photo album and stopped on a picture of his father. He was standing in the front yard of the house with an axe in his hand.
"Dad, Daphne and I take magic very seriously. I learned the hard way. I can't go near most of the stuff, but Daphne, sure, she gets excited when she gets to use it, but it's not a game to her. She respects it, Dad, and she's really good with it. She's better than Uncle Jake. Every once in a while, something's going to happen that we couldn't have predicted, but that's not magic. That's life. If we don't teach the ever-afters how to fight, they will not win this war. And we need them to win it, Dad. If we want a happy ending, we have to show them how to win it."
Henry stared at his daughter for a long moment. "When did you get so smart?" Sabrina shrugged.
"I think I inherited it from you. Plus, I've got a good friend who gives amazing advice."
Henry pulled Sabrina up off the bed and hugged her. "Okay, new rules," he said. "I'll get used to the fact that my daughters are tougher and smarter than I am."
"And older than you think they are," Sabrina interrupted.
"You're driving Daphne nuts when you call her a baby. She's very sensitive about it." "Okay, I'll do all those things if you promise to still love me, no matter how obnoxious I am. Agreed?"
"Agreed. Oh, and stop arguing with Mom. It's getting boring."
Henry laughed. "Don't sugarcoat it, Sabrina. Tell me how you really feel."
"I'm sure I inherited that from Mom," she said.
"Do you have your keys with you?"
Sabrina pulled the huge keyring from her pocket. "Yeah, why?"
"I think there are a few other items this army could use."
She followed her father back into the Hall of Wonders, and then from room to room, collecting a variety of magical objects.
Sabrina had seen some of them, including the Wicked Witch's golden helmet that could summon an army of flying monkeys, but there were more she had never seen. One of them was a small metal object he explained was a magnifying projector. Henry said it had been brought from Oz and could make small ever-afters bigger. He said that someone named H.M. Wogglebug was an example, but Sabrina didn't know who he was talking about. They also snatched a small vial labeled the Powder of Life. Henry said it was responsible for bringing the Sawhorse and Jack Pumpkinhead to life, and that it might be used to construct more members for the army. It was exciting to hear her father explain things. She had once thought of him as lovable but dull, a normal dad. But now, he was thrilling. Even though her mind had been calmed by her conversations with Mirror and her father, Sabrina slept uneasily. For one, there was a tingling sensation at the base of her spine that she was certain indicated a long monkey tail was coming soon. Also, she was sure that Puck would launch another attack, and she feared how the boy would top flying horse cockabombs. Sometime during the night, she sensed someone standing over her, and she leaped to her feet, kicking and punching. Positive, Puck was about to unleash something disgusting. Unfortunately, it wasn't Puck. It was Uncle Jake. "You really like your sleep," her uncle said, nursing a red mark on his right cheek.
"I'm sorry," she cried. "Wake your sister. We have a mystery to solve."
After much vigorous shaking, the little girl was on her feet, and the sisters followed their uncle into the fort. It was a flurry of activity. Everyone was rushing about with buckets of water, doing their best to put out the raging fire that was turning the camp's garden into ash.
"The saboteur has struck again," Uncle Jake said.
"Fudge," Daphne complained. "This guy is starting to get on my nerves."
"He freed the chickens in the henhouse, too, but that's not what we should be concerned about. Look." Uncle Jake pointed to the ground. There she saw the broken pieces of hundreds of arrows. Sabrina knew at once these belonged to the Merry Men. They had been working on them for days and were to play a major part in the next day's attacks.
"Did you see anything?"
Sabrina asked her uncle. She knew he had spent another night next to Briar's grave. He shook his head. "I must have dozed off. The fire was raging when I woke up. Whoever is doing this has gotten away with it three times. It's time to put the grim detective skills to work." Daphne clapped her hands.
"Yay!"
"I'll search the garden," Uncle Jake said. "Daphne, you take the hen house, and Sabrina, you search the armory. If you find any clues, whistle." The trio separated. Sabrina rushed to the armory and found the large metal lock on the door intact.
How could the saboteur get the arrows out of the armory without opening the door?
Perhaps he had a key. She thought about who had keys. Charming, Seven, Robin Hood, Ms. White, and maybe a few others. None of them struck her as someone who would betray the camp. Charming hadn't always been trustworthy, but this was his camp. He was too proud of himself to sabotage it. She circled the building to look for another way in, and found a window on the far side that was slightly open. This must have been how the villain had gotten inside and removed the arrows. She was just tall enough to pull herself onto the window's ledge and force the window open. She clambered into the dark, dry room. Inside, she smelled welded metal. There wasn't much light, and the moon, hidden behind clouds, was not helping. She wondered if she should climb out and get a match, but decided against it when she got a strong whiff of gunpowder. The last thing she wanted to do was blow herself sky high. It would be hard to solve a mystery on the moon. Since she couldn't see, the whole investigation seemed pointless, so she decided to climb out. The sun would be up soon, and so she would have to wait. As she made her way back to the windowsill, she stepped on something that rolled. She lost her footing and tumbled onto her backside. She quietly cursed the pain as she searched in the dark for what had caused her accident. Her fingers touched something small and sleek that felt like wood. She shoved it into her pocket. Whatever it was, it might make someone else fall. She got back to her feet, crawled out the window, and rushed to find her sister and uncle. Both had returned to where she had left them, and they had been equally unsuccessful.
"I couldn't see a thing in the chicken house," Daphne said. "I had the same problem," Sabrina said.
"There was nothing in the garden," Uncle Jake said.
"I'll have to wait until they put the fire out to search the rest of it."
"Well, that was a bust," Daphne said. "You want to come into the hall and sleep with the rest of us?" Sabrina asked, seeing the dark rings around her uncle's eyes. "Yeah, you're going to get the flu sleeping out here," Daphne scolded.
Uncle Jake shook his head. "No, I need to be near her." He turned and walked back to Briar's grave. It was morning faster than she expected.
Henry and Daphne went to work training as many soldiers as they could in the use of the new weapons. But it did little to raise the army's morale. Also discouraging was the cold rain and fog that had drifted into camp. It was a miserable day, and it reflected in the faces of the already reluctant army. As they marched through the gates to fight their next battle, Sabrina wondered if she would see any of them alive again. The first battle had been disastrous, and, according to some, an ambush. Now, as they went off to battle again, the lingering feelings of humiliation, fright, and exhaustion weighed on their shoulders more than their heavy packs of supplies. Uncle Jake was the only one among them that looked prepared and focused. Aside from a handful of elderly guards deemed too feeble to fight, and a small group of ever-after children, which included Red and Pinocchio, the Grimms were left alone in the camp. Everyone did what they could to occupy themselves until the soldiers returned. Granny spent most of the day studying a three-dimensional map of the town that Mr. Seven had constructed. She fretted over Charming's plan and studied all possibilities. When she had a strategic idea or a good route for a retreat, she told one of the ever-after birds that had stayed behind, and it flew off to deliver her message to the troops. Henry and Veronica had a long talk as they walked about the fort. When they came back, they were hand in hand, and the bitterness between them had vanished. They looked the way Sabrina had always remembered them. Daphne, Puck, and Elvis played a game in which they tossed an old pie tin through the air to see who could catch it in their teeth first, the big dog or Puck. Pinocchio was invited to join them, but he refused, claiming he was not interested in baby games. Instead, he wandered from one adult to the next, eager to start a conversation about art or science or chess. Sabrina felt a pang of sympathy for him. She knew what it was like to be treated like a child. Pinocchio was only a child in form, but few seemed to notice. The day slowly ticked by, and by evening, everyone was nearly dying for news. They sat together in the mess tent, picking through beef stew and cornbread. Red Riding Hood and Mr. Canis entered. It was clear from Red's puffy face and tear-soaked cheeks that she had had another startling revelation.
"I remember something about the master. His face is so strong. His eyes are so tiny and black. But there's another face."
"What do you mean?" Sabrina said, her curiosity piqued.
"That's all she's remembered," Mr. Canis said. "I think we're going to stop for the evening. The toll on the child is too much."
Granny took the little girl in her arms and hugged her.
"You are so brave." "I'm trying," Red sighed.
Just then, a guard rushed into the tent.
"The soldiers, they're back."
Everyone rushed into the courtyard just as the massive fort doors swung open. A stream of soldiers stomped in, cheering, singing, and carrying Prince Charming on their shoulders.
"We destroyed the marina," Snow White said as she approached the Grimms. "We took them completely by surprise. The hand won't be getting any help by boat anymore."
She was suddenly lifted onto the shoulders of a troll and paraded through the fort like her former fiancé.
"The marina?" Henry exclaimed. "I heard your plan. You were going to attack the sheriff's office."
"That's what the prince told us all, but he had a completely different plan in mind,"
Rip Van Winkle crowed.
"The man is a genius."
Goldilocks pushed through the crowd with the help of her bears. She found Charming and called for his attention.
"Well," he said.
Goldilocks nodded.
"Your suspicions were correct. The Scarlet Hand was waiting at the sheriff's office in full force."
"William,
they're confused,"
Granny Relda said.
"Well, Mrs. Grimm, we have good news and bad news. The good news is we just cut off a very important supply line for the master. The bad news is that we have a traitor within our ranks. Someone in this fort fed our battle plans to the Scarlet Hand. I knew there was no way anyone could have been ready for our last attack. To prove my suspicions, I conceived a bogus mission and switched to my real plan at the last minute."
"I was at Nottingham's office. The entire Scarlet Hand army was there waiting for us," Goldilocks said. "If we had gone, we probably wouldn't have come back.
So you went to the marina to finish the original plan, Daphne cried. Gravy!
They never saw us coming, Charming said, puffing out his chest proudly. Now, all we have to do is figure out who our spy is.
Snow stepped forward.
Worry about it tomorrow. These people need to celebrate.
Charming grinned and turned to his soldiers. We gave it to the master, didn't we?
The crowd roared.
Have a little fun, people. You deserve it, he cried.
Tables were conjured, candles were lit, and wine flowed into every cup. There was dancing and singing, and soldiers told battle stories with details that grew more exaggerated with each telling. Sabrina spotted Morgan Le Fay and Mr. Seven dancing beside a supply tent. He was standing on a chair, so the two were cheek to cheek. The distraught, broken army that had marched out of the fort that morning was now confident and proud. Still, Charming's concern over the saboteur was weighing heavily on Sabrina.
I wonder what the saboteur has planned for us tonight, she said.
Granny shook her head.
It's a terrible shame that someone would turn on their own people. It could be anyone, Daphne said.
And there are so many ever-afters in the camp. I don't know most of them, Henry added.
Everyone took a moment to look at the huge crowd of ever-afters drinking, eating, and dancing.
Did anyone find any clues? Sabrina asked.
Henry shook his head. I searched the armory this morning and found just as much as you did. Nothing.
Sabrina nodded, then remembered the little wooden object she had found in the dark room. She reached into her pocket.
All I found was this thing. It nearly killed me.
She took it from her pocket and set it on the table. All eyes turned to it, and everyone grew quiet. Sabrina was so surprised she could barely speak.
It's a little leg, Granny said.
A little wooden leg, Daphne said, picking it up and examining it. It looks like one of Pinocchio's marionette legs.
How did it end up in the armory? Veronica asked.
The group grew quiet.
It can't be him, Granny said.
Mom, what other explanation can there be? Henry said.
Wait, are you telling me that Pinocchio is the spy? Sabrina asked.
Granny's face fell.
Poor Geppetto, he'll be heartbroken.
What do we do? Veronica said. Should we confront him?
Follow me,
Mr. Canis said, as he hobbled toward Pinocchio's tent. Once there, he used his cane to lift the tent's flap. Inside were nearly 100 finished marionettes, along with several thick reams of wood and a carving knife. On one wall of the tent was a blood-red handprint. Anybody have any doubts now? Henry said. He dug through a pile of marionettes until he found one with a missing leg. It fit perfectly with the one Sabrina had found in the armory. He tossed it angrily onto the pile.
Where is he? Canis asked.
It appears the party is over,
a voice said. Everyone turned to find Pinocchio standing behind them. He stood calmly, as if he was not ashamed of his crimes.
Why?
Sabrina cried.
He's going to grant me a wish.
Who?
Henry demanded.
The master. He's going to make me a man, the boy said.
Sabrina rushed to Pinocchio and shook him by his shirt collar roughly.
Explain yourself. The master came to me. He offered me my heart's desire to grow into a man. I can't expect you to understand. Do you have any idea what it's like to be seen and spoken to as a child every day?
Yeah, Daphne snapped.
Try it for hundreds of years. Forced to play with other children, never allowed to grow or mature because I am trapped in this body. I wanted life from the blue fairy, but look how she cursed me. The master has promised to give me what I most desire. And if people die in the process?
Granny cried.
You see him as your enemy, Pinocchio said. But he can be your friend. He can give you anything you want. You could wish everyone back to life. That princess that died, Briar Rose, he could raise her from the dead. All you have to do is ask.
Uncle Jake glared. We need to put him somewhere he can't get into any trouble.
I can help with that, Puck said, as he drew his wooden sword.
Just then, a horrible sound filled the air. Sabrina knew it well, and the look on her sister's face confirmed it.
A dragon! They cried.
Others recognized the sound as well, and the celebration turned to chaos. People ran like nervous rabbits, screaming and crying. Everafters fell to the ground and were trampled by others. In the madness, Pinocchio pulled free from Puck and darted into the crowd, disappearing from sight. Puck was eager to go after him, but Granny stopped him.
Let him go. We'll catch him later. For now, we have to get everyone to safety.
Get to your posts, Robin Hood shouted as he charged through the courtyard.
Charming climbed on top of a table and commanded everyone's attention.
Remember your training. We can fight this thing.
But when a violet-colored dragon with the face of a cat appeared on the horizon, Sabrina could see the prince's confidence melt away. The creature circled the fort like an overgrown vulture preparing to feast on the body of a dead coyote. Sabrina could taste the fear in the back of her throat, but struggled to remain calm. She turned her attention to Geppetto, who stood in the courtyard aiming his bow and arrow toward the sky.
You can fire arrows at it all day, Sabrina told him. They're not going to help.
I have to do something. They have to be stopped, the old man said.
They? How many are there?
Three just swooped over the fort, the old man said as he pointed north. They came from that direction. One blasted the west wall. I sent guards to put out the fire, but the water tower valve is broken. There's no way to get any water out of it.
Sabrina's father and Granny Relda raced across the courtyard with Elvis close behind. The big dog was barking hysterically.
I just spotted another seven flying in from the south, Puck shouted.
Everyone, through the portal, now, Henry shouted.
Guards rushed toward Charming's cabin, where the magical escape hatch was kept.
But we should fight, Puck argued.
I thought you weren't a hero, Sabrina said.
Who says villains can't kill dragons?
He teased.
Besides, it will look great on my resume.
Mr. Canis shook his head.
Not this time. You have to get to safety.
Come on, girls,
Veronica said, as she grabbed Sabrina and Daphne by the hands. Before they could take a step, a white dragon with orange stripes across its belly crashed to the ground in front of them, blocking their path. A dozen knights raced to the beast and attacked it with their swords.
Okay, we need a new plan, Daphne said.
Granny Relda rose to her full height.
Veronica, seems to me you were pretty good with mechanical things.
I fixed some leaky sinks and the TV antenna once, Veronica said.
You're the best we've got. Get over to the water tower and see if you can't get the valves working.
She raced off to do as she was told.
Henry, get up on the east tower and turn that water cannon on, she said. As soon as Veronica has the water working, try to knock one of those dragons out of the air.
Puck took his sword out of his belt.
I'll go kill one, he said.
I have another job for you. How would you like to throw some rocks at it?
The old woman asked. Puck scrunched up his face.
I hardly think rocks will do much.
Granny pointed behind her. There sat one of Swinehart and Bormann's catapults. It was a monstrous machine with a giant boulder loaded into its arm. Several more boulders as big as cars sat nearby. Puck rubbed his hands together eagerly.
Looks right up my alley, old lady.
Take Sabrina and Daphne with you, she said.
Canis stepped forward.
Relda, perhaps it's time to bring the wolf back. I have the jar in my jacket and...
Absolutely not. I believe we can manage without that monster. Besides, I'm going to need you and Red to get me through this camp once it's safe.
Canis didn't look convinced, but said nothing. Everyone raced to do their jobs, though Sabrina suspected she and Daphne were just being kept busy. Once they reached the catapult, though, she changed her mind. The device was incredibly intricate. Despite its crude appearance, it had dozens of knobs and buttons and a complex series of weights and counterweights.
Daphne wasn't strong enough to move all the levers, so Sabrina did the heavy lifting while Puck aimed the catapult and Daphne pushed buttons and pulled ropes. A black dragon with white tusks swooped over the fortress. Sabrina's brain was screaming for someone to push the button that would release the boulder, but Puck insisted they wait. A moment later, the dragon was gone.
"Why didn't you fire?" Daphne cried.
"We have to wait until we're lined up perfectly. Don't worry, we'll get another chance."
"That's what I'm afraid of," Sabrina said. "It's coming right for us."
The creature made a beeline for the catapult. Once it was close enough, it reared its head back and prepared to blast them with its fiery breath. Then Puck gave the order, and Daphne slammed her hand down on a red button. The giant spring inside the machine screeched as it extended, and with incredible force, the arm of the catapult whipped upward, hurling the monstrous rock with it. The boulder rocketed into the sky.
"Eat that, ugly!"
Puck cried, just as the boulder slammed into the dragon's face. It bellowed in agony, and magma poured out of the sides of its mouth and down its face. The dragon fell out of the sky and slammed into the courtyard. Its eyes glazed white, and its heaving chest grew still.
"Gravy!"
Daphne cried.
"That's one!"
Puck crowed, celebrating with a ridiculous whooping victory dance.
9 to go, bubblehead," Sabrina said.
She started turning the levers to lower the catapult's arm.
"We need to reload the catapult. You think you can pull that off?"
Puck placed his hands on his hips and spun around on his heels. When he stopped, a bizarre transformation began. His body swelled up to an enormous size. His nose grew so large that it hung well past his feet, and his ears turned gray and inflated to the size of kites. 2 huge white tusks sprang out from under his nose, and his skin turned wrinkled and tough. In no time at all, he was an elephant. He lumbered over to the nearest boulder, put his head against it, and pushed. The huge stone rolled slowly forward, but it rolled nonetheless. It was clearly an effort for Puck, but he pushed onward until the rock was firmly in the catapult's arm. The girls went to work, twisting the knobs and weights once more in preparation for another dragon's assault. While they worked, Sabrina watched her father in the east tower. The cannon he maneuvered was attached to a huge pipe that fed into the water tower, but with the valve busted, it was completely dry. As a brown dragon flew by, it sent flames at the exterior wall of the camp. Helpless, Henry could not put them out. When the dragon doubled back and buzzed the top of the watchtower, he had to crouch low to avoid one of its black talons.
"How's it going, Mom?" Sabrina shouted.
Veronica had climbed up on a ladder near the tower and was trying to pull something out of a knob that opened the valves.
"Pinocchio shoved something in here. If I could only get it out."
"Could you hurry?"
Henry shouted from across the camp.
"Keep your pants on, pal," she cried.
The brown dragon turned high in the sky and flew like an arrow at her father's watchtower. Fire was blasting out of its mouth. Henry was helpless.
"Puck, we have to get the brown one now."
Puck spun himself back to his regular shape and then turned the catapult in the proper direction. He looked through a sight to line up his shot.
"Puck, you can't miss," Sabrina said fiercely. "I won't miss," Puck said,
but he couldn't hide his agitation.
"Fire!"
Daphne slammed on the red button, and again a rock was flung into the sky. Unfortunately, it rocketed past the monster and flew into the forest.
"Oops," Puck said.
Sabrina looked up and saw the dragon preparing his blast. Her father stood helpless on the tower. There was nothing she could do.
"I got it!"
Veronica cried. And suddenly water was blasting out of the cannon and straight into the mouth of the dragon. It gurgled and gasped as it fell to the ground. Once there, it flipped over on its back and died.
"That was the coolest thing I've ever seen," Puck said as he ran for the other watchtower. "You guys handle the rock thrower. I'm going to have fun with the world's biggest squirt gun." "Hey, how are we supposed to load this thing?"
Sabrina cried. But the fairy boy was already climbing the ladder. Daphne looked over at the massive rock. That's going to take more elbow grease than the two of us have.
You help Dad, Sabrina said. I'll try to keep old Stinkface focused. I wouldn't put it past him to fire that thing at us.
The girls raced off in opposite directions. Soon, Sabrina reached the platform where Puck was busy spraying water all over the forest and ignoring the circling monsters.
You really have an attention problem, Sabrina said, pointing to a jade-colored dragon zooming toward them. She wrenched the handle of the cannon away from Puck and turned it toward the flying nightmare. The device was attached to a pivot in the floor and swung in a 360-degree circle. It also had a metal pin at the end of the cannon that acted as a sight and allowed her to aim. She pushed the firing button lightly, just to see how much water would come out, and was surprised to see a torrent wash down over the forest. As the dragon got closer, she braced herself and fired. The water shot out of the cannon and hit the dragon right in the jaw. It was a lucky shot, but an effective one, and the creature reared back in panic.
"Hey! I called this tower! Go kill dragons somewhere else!"
Puck shouted as he shoved her out of the way. A white dragon appeared on his left and barreled down on the fort, sending a river of flame that left a scorched trail across the entire complex and ignited the eastern wall.
"You're not supposed to let it burn the place to the ground. If you can't do this, step aside," Sabrina said.
Puck growled.
"Leave me alone. I know what I'm doing."
Puck fired the cannon, but without a head-on approach, the water was of little use. The white dragon was unfazed and continued circling the fort.
"Give me the cannon, Puck," Sabrina said, pushing Puck out of the way.
Studying the skies for another flying menace, she quickly spotted the white dragon approaching fast. She trained the weapon on the beast and waited patiently, seeing the fire licking the insides of its jaws. She had to let it get close to make her attack effective. In fact, she realized she had to let it get so close, it would put her into a do-or-die situation. To get the best shot and put out the fire inside the dragon, it needed to be nearly on top of her. She grasped the handle of the cannon tightly and forced herself to stay put.
Closer, closer.
She could feel the heat of the creature approaching. Her ears were full of its roars and the sound of its wings.
Let it get closer.
It was nearly at the fence. Any second now, it would be right on top of her. She fired right into the dragon's open jaws. It fell out of the sky, but crashed inside the fort and leveled the mess tent. When it hit the ground, it skidded across the yard, slamming into another dead dragon.
"I'm catching up, ugly," Sabrina said. "Lucky shot," Puck complained as he snatched the cannon away from Sabrina.
He spun the cannon toward another approaching dragon and fired. He missed the mark and tried again.
"What's the matter, Booger Brain? Do you need a bigger target?"
Sabrina cried, pulling the cannon away from Puck.
He yanked it back. "Who can concentrate with your breath in my face? I'm probably not hitting anything because you have infected me with your puberty virus."
"Puck, puberty isn't a virus. You go through it when you grow up."
"Well, why would I want to grow up?"
he shouted.
"I'm perfectly happy to stay this age forever, but you come along, and now all of a sudden I'm getting taller and my voice is changing."
"Don't look at me. I didn't ask you to grow up," Sabrina said, scanning the sky for more dragons. She could see three high in the sky circling the fort.
"You started this war against me, but aging is your own fault. You wouldn't grow a day older if you didn't want to."
Just then, three arrows thudded into the side of the platform. Sabrina studied the forest to find their source and nearly fell over in shock when she spotted the massive army approaching the fort. There must have been 2,000 ever-afters charging in their direction. Sheriff Nottingham and the Queen of Hearts were leading the throng. Even from her great height, Sabrina could see the bright red handprints on their chests.
"The Scarlet Hand is here!"
Sabrina shouted down to the soldiers inside the fort. The news caused even more panic than before, and many in Charming's army fled into cabins and tents, presumably to hide.
She snatched the cannon back from Puck and turned it on the approaching army. She pushed the fire button hard and unleashed an avalanche of water on them. The liquid crashed into the center of their ranks and knocked nearly 100 goblin soldiers flat. She continued her assault, hosing down as many of the thugs as she could. She couldn't be sure, but she thought she might have waterlogged nearly 500 soldiers until something terrible and unexpected happened. The stream of water turned into a trickle. She turned to the water tower and saw her mother peering into a glass window on its side. "It's run dry!" she shouted. Without the water cannon, there was little they could do against the overwhelming hand army or the 5 remaining dragons hovering overhead.
"Why aren't you firing?" Puck cried.
"We're out of water," Sabrina explained.
"That can't be right. You must be doing it wrong," he said, pulling the cannon out of her hands once more.
He pushed the fire button over and over with no results.
"You broke it!"
Puck swung the cannon around in anger. The nozzle spun and hit Sabrina in the chest. The force was so powerful, she was knocked right off the platform and fell backward off the tower. She saw sky above her and felt the wind in her hair. How ironic, she thought, as she fell to her certain death, that at that moment she would have given anything to be a giant goose again.